You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jay King from The Athletic, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great, formerly of WEI. We got a bevy of topics to discuss today, from Ray Allen entering the Hall of Fame to Brad Stevens and Doc Rivers discussing sort of what the Celtics will need to do to tap into their very high potential. And Terry Rozier revealing that Gordon Hayward looks really good, which is always exciting. Let's start with Ray Allen going into the Hall of Fame. I was pleasantly surprised that there wasn't much 08 Celtics talk. There wasn't much talk about the rift he has between him and his teammates. The focus was kind of on the rest of Ray Allen's career, which I think it should be. Honestly, like, this is 6 years now that Ray Allen has had a rift with the 08 Celtics. And KG, Paul Pierce, Rajon Rondo, Glenn Davis, Kendrick Perkins, I don't know who else has a rift with
Ray Allen. It's crazy that Big Baby gets included in that. Like, he does not deserve to be on that level. But
he was on KG Area 21 discussing it. So
it's crazy he got the invite to that show.
Glenn Davis is on that level. Big three champion Glenn Davis. Correct. Yeah, put some respect on that name. So I thought it was cool that he didn't really discuss much. He did say he just wants to remember his time with the Celtics instead of the way he left, which is cool.
Fair.
But, I mean, I still think it's so freaking dumb. I wanted to drop the F word there. I really wanted to drop the F word there. I'm trying to be...
Have you gotten notes? Because normally you're pretty liberal with the F-bombs.
I'm trying to be a role model for the next generation here. I just think it's so dumb that neither side at this point has caved and just been like, you know what? We accomplished a lot together. It sucked that things ended the way they did, but let's just remember the championship.
Well, that's what the Hall of Fame should be. It's like it's a celebration of greatness, and like, why dwell on like the negatives? It really should be focusing on the positive and Ray Allen being like one of the best three-point shooters that ever lived and having like the best shooting form I've ever seen. And he was, if you ever like doubt Ray Allen, just like go back and watch his highlights from the Milwaukee Bucks and his ability to attack the rim. He was damn impressive and a Hall of Famer even before he came to the Celtics. What I was curious about is just like I haven't been to the Hall of Fame since I was, I think, like 12 years old, but I was curious like what the induction ceremony is like. I'm assuming they do like media after each of their speeches and things like that, but it seemed like all of the basketball world's there. You're talking to different people. Set the scene for us, you Big J journalist. What's Springfield, what's the ceremony like down there?
Okay, so first they bring up all the inductees and have them fitted. Like they all slide into their orange, disgusting Hall of Fame jackets. And then from there, it becomes like each player or coach or whatever, all the inductees give a speech, very brief speech. And then they go into a press conference for each of the players. And as a journalist, a Big J journalist like myself,
Big J as in J-A-Y.
Ooh, Rain and Jays.
There you go. you have to decide who you want to talk to. And it kind of sucked for me. No lie, I kind of hated this is the dumbest complaint I'll ever have in my entire life. I wish Ray Allen wasn't in this class because...
So you could go talk to Steve Nash and Grant Hill and Jason Kidd?
Grant Hill and Steve Nash were my two, literally number one and number two on my favorite player list growing up. Grant Hill was number one. Steve Nash was number two. And I just wanted to chat with them. And it's kind of surreal to me, the fact that, first of all, I'm credentialed for the Hall of Fame. Like, it's still stupid.
That shouldn't be that surreal. You've been a media credentialed media member for what, 5 years now, 6 years, 7 years?
Yeah, but it still feels stupid to me that like I'm allowed to talk to these guys.
Oh yeah, like, I share that feeling. I'm surprised that every time the Celtics let me in their building, so that's fair.
Like, my dumbass is allowed to talk to these guys. But especially Grant Hill. Honestly, he was my favorite player growing up. I cannot tell you how much I admired Grant Hill as a child, as a young Duke fan and basketball fan. Grant Hill was just my guy. That was really cool for me to be part of, I mean, the smallest, very smallest part of his induction. So that was dope for me. And then, yeah, you just kind of go and talk to players, talk to coaches, and talk to whoever you want. They all sit at a table for an allotted time, and you can just chat with them.
How do you qualify for a table in the media section? But J. King didn't get his own table. I'm assuming like coaches connected to Ray Allen got their own table, or is it just like
No. So it's all the inductees get their own table.
Oh, I gotcha,
And then so you gotta go to the inductee to chat with him or her. And so I basically just stayed at Ray Allen's the whole time until he left, and then went over to Grant Hill because he's my guy. He is my guy.
What did you ask Grant Hill any questions?
No.
You just wanted to bask in his glory?
I just reveled in Grant Hill's glory. That's all I did. That's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to be within his presence.
I also saw, I was looking at this this good website called theathletic.com. I saw you also talk to Brian Scalabrine about Ray Allen, and I thought it was an interesting article. So I'm giving you a chance to double plug it right now.
I appreciate that. Yeah, that was cool because I pulled Scal aside. Scal was there. He was there for Jason Kidd and Rod Thorne and Ray Allen. So obviously he was teammates with Jason Kidd. He was teammates with Ray Allen and Rod Thorne, I believe, was the GM of the Nets who gave Scal his $15 million contract. I could be wrong there. So he had a lot of ties at the thing. So I pulled him aside and I just asked him about Ray and what kind of set Ray aside. And it was really neat to talk to Scal about just the way Ray Allen prepared as a shooter. Because Scal was a 12-year vet. Scal was a guy who played in the NBA for a long time, saw a lot of pregame preparation, played with a ton of great shooters, including Kyle Korver, one of the best ever. And he said Ray Allen prepared just like no other. And so the basketball geek in me loved that conversation. It was really cool to hear him say how, like, Ray Allen didn't – like, I go out and shoot shots. I shoot shots. I try to feel comfortable, right? Like, you shoot shots, you try to make shots. You try to make as many shots as you can. If you make a lot of shots, you feel good about yourself. You feel good about your shot. Ray Allen did it another way. He went out and he tried to make himself uncomfortable. He tried to he would do spins and he would try to work on a quicker release than he used in games. He would work on footwork drills that he would just be like flying into shots and shooting shots from different off balance positions. And that's how he became. I wasn't going to swear. I was going to be a role model for the next generation. But that's that's what helped separate him. And obviously, I mean, he probably had God-given gifts that allowed him to be such a great shooter. And obviously, he was a really talented guy, but he worked at his craft differently than just about everyone else did. And it's cool to hear about that. And to realize that the difference in the work, it's at that level, like everybody works hard, and sometimes it's working differently and more intelligently that will give you the edge. So that was really fun to talk to Scal about that, and just hear how he kind of marveled at the way Ray shot. And he said he actually tried it because shit, I'll swear again, shit, it was Ray Allen. And he was like, yeah, I got to try to do what Ray does in practice. And he was like, I missed every single shot. I could not do nearly what Ray Allen did. And that was the point. It was to put stress on Ray and to put him in different situations that he couldn't handle maybe at the time, and to learn how to handle that, so that when a game came and when it was game six of the 2013 NBA Finals and he had to pop into the corner and not even look, literally, I don't think he looked once at the three-point arc before hitting one of the most iconic shots of all time. He was just ready for that, and he prepared for situations like that. So that was really fun. That the Hall of Fame is it's really cool to just get a glimpse of what makes the greats great. And I'm thankful to Scal, honestly, for allowing me to talk to him about what kind of made Ray Allen great.
That like kind of drive that Ray Allen has shown, and you like, there's a lot of stories about this. This is actually the first time I've kind of like heard of him trying to make himself more uncomfortable. You always hear stories about him. It's kind of his drive on and borderline kind of a obsessive compulsive disorder, where I think Jackie McMullen mentioned that in her.
It wasn't borderline. He literally had OCD.
And that makes sense. It's like him striving to be perfection, and it kind of, I'm playing like armchair psychologist here, but to like put himself in such uncomfortable situations where you're most likely going to mess up and miss shots, and just like keep working and working until he perfected that. It's damn impressive. It's definitely like a borderline where it's like, at some point it might not be healthy, but if you're going to be practiced to become the best basketball shooter ever, maybe a little OCD helps. But that drive and that work ethic is always something that was impressive about Ray, throughout his time in Boston, just throughout his career. Cause you always hear stories about this, just the preparation he put in. And so it's cool to hear just like a little background nugget like that from Scal.
Yeah, it was really cool. And Scal, like, as I said, he's been around. He said the only guy he's ever seen work like Ray Allen is Stephen Curry. And they just try to make themselves uncomfortable. And like, maybe every shooter should just do that. Like shit.
Well, you have to master the comfortable shots. You have to get bored with making just open threes again to start working on the uncomfortable ones.
That's probably fair. That's probably very fair. Yeah. So not everybody gets that level, but Ray did. And so it was cool to kind of steer it a different direction than the stupid 08 Celtics controversy. God bless that controversy
that
never ends.
Speaking of being comfortable and uncomfortable, Brad Stevens was recently talking about how he didn't want the Celtics to be comfortable heading into the season. Woo! That's a segue.
That was a segue. That was an elite segue.
We always do that. Anytime we do a good segue, we immediately compliment ourselves on the like the greatness of the segue, ruining the segue.
I don't think that ruins the segue. I think it highlights how great the segue was, to be honest.
But the point of the segue is to quickly transition into another point, and now we're going on, what, 30 seconds about segue talk?
Yeah, but
have you ever ridden a Segway, honestly, scooter?
I maybe once. I feel like I did at the beach one time.
One time I was visiting my my friend in Chicago, and she had two tickets to a Segway scooter tour of Chicago, but she couldn't use them. So me and my friend I was visiting in, we took the Segway scooter tour, and it was terrible. We had to spend an hour on a Segway. It was very boring. We had to wear these goofy helmets. We had to stay in line. It was like 107 degrees out. Really soured on the Segway scooter ever since then.
That's not great that you've soured on the Segway scooter. However, your Segway was fantastic and set us up perfectly to discuss Brad Stevens' desire for the Celtics not to get comfortable.
That's true. He what was his quote? There's like we haven't done anything yet. We haven't gotten to the playoffs. We haven't won any games. We have to earn all those things. It's classic coach speak. It's like exactly what you think he would say. But
I also loved how he said that the Toronto Raptors. Like he made a point to say the Toronto Raptors were the best team in the Eastern Conference, and then added one of the best players in the NBA. He was like, okay, guys. You may feel like you're hot shit, but the Raptors won 59 games last year and added Kawhi Leonard. So middle finger to all y'all, and make sure you work a little harder in training camp.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what he has to do. There's a lot of expectations coming in on this Celtics team with so much continuity and the whole Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving thing. And so if you're Brad Stevens, you have to make sure that they have that that drive and that like desire to win and kind of put in the level of preparation that Ray Allen put in. And it was interesting because Brad Stevens spoke on the same night as Doc Rivers was there, and he was talking about kind of that drive of the 08 team and their commitment to winning and how he would take them over everyone else. And it was just an interesting juxtaposition. Those guys were a little bit older in their career, probably like their last chance at a championship, and so they really put in that commitment. They had the whole Ubuntu thing, but it's like, it's Stevens challenging his players to kind of have the same commitment as that 08 team. And it's going to be interesting to see how that develops and kind of that the effort they put in moving forward with all these expectations.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest question marks about the Celtics. Obviously, they have a ton of talent. Obviously, they have, like, just immense depth. Like, when you look at their depth, it's very different from most teams in the league. You look at like Marcus Morris, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, Aaron Baines, probably all coming off the bench. Daniel Tice, like just quality players coming off the bench, a lot of them. And a lot of those guys are young guys and young guys who haven't accomplished much yet individually. Like Terry Rozier, like he knows now he can be a starter. And Jason Tatum, he knows now, or at least he strongly suspects he can be a star. And Jaylen Brown, same thing. And so there's a lot of this young talent in Boston that's going to have to sacrifice. And it's going to be different because it's young guys who haven't accomplished much. And it's young guys who have to put aside their individual goals at a time when they probably don't want to do that. Or they probably want to see, like, what can I do? And Jason Tatum, like, he did a lot as a rookie. He did a whole lot as a rookie. And now Gordon Hayward's back. Now Kyrie Irving's back. So I do think that's one of the questions. I don't know how big a question it is, and I won't know that until we see the Celtics play and we see how they mesh and we see how everything works together. I do think that the 08 Celtics, this is probably a weird comment. Maybe not a weird comment, but one of the things that made the 08 Celtics mesh, beyond the fact that those guys had all failed in other places team-wise, was the fact that their skill sets just really fit together, right? Like Ray Allen was the shooter who came around screens, and Paul Pierce was the scorer who made things happen and created everything. And Kevin Garnett was the best defender in the game and somebody who was eternally selfless. And so their skills just meshed. And I do think to an extent the Celtics this year, their skill sets should mesh. And I do think that will make things a lot easier. Like both sides of the court, I think they'll have versatility. They'll have a ton of shooting. They'll have a ton of playmakers and guys that should be able to play with each other from just the standpoint of like what they do, it kind of works with each other. So I think that might make things easier. But I am interested to see how it all fits together now that they have everybody back, including Gordon Hayward, including Kyrie Irving. And with the young guys, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, even Marcus Smart to an extent, trying to kind of discover themselves as players and see what else they can do, and maybe not being able to get the chance to do everything.
I think in terms of personality on this team, the Celtics are in a good position moving forward. Just like none of the guys on the team right now seem like they're too selfish, and maybe it's just because of they you mentioned they have young guys who just don't have the personality or the reputation to like kind of to be that selfish. But I think that Brad Stevens is a great coach for this kind of a scenario where there is expectations, just because he's the most modest individual who's I've ever encountered who absolutely hates compliments, and he's not gonna. I think there's like the. He has a belief in that everything, like you have to be continually trying to get better and continually, it is literally the Kaizen mentality and the growth mindset of just, there has to be continuous improvement, and that they actually haven't accomplished anything yet. And I don't think he's going to be in a place where he's just handing out compliments or giving the guys credit when they haven't earned anything. He's really focusing on just, they're all talented and they're all going to be in a position to win. But man, I really just like, just embraced full cliche speak and talking about Brad Stevens. That was weird there. But I actually do think his personality is good for a team like this, because he's never going to get too high or get too low. It's really, the focus is going to be on the work. Wow, man. I'm so good at channeling my inner Brad Stevens. It's this cliche left and right.
That's kind of a totally bad place to switch to my boy Andres Villar's tweet. But I'm gonna switch up the topic.
I'm glad you brought him up. I was gonna bring him up too.
Andres wants us to know that we should not call Hayward Gordo, because that means fat in Spanish, and we need to choose another nickname for him. And should we call him Guapo?
We could call him El Guapo. That's the first thing I thought of. Shouts to the original El Guapo, Rich Garces, who El was Guapo Gordo.
He was one of my favorite baseball players, man. Just a fat-ass dude who just slung pitches.
Yeah. I mean, but like...
He was called El Guapo, which means...
Handsome.
The handsome?
Yeah.
Yeah. Handsome, and he was just a fat-ass. So, shouts to El Guapo. So, maybe if we call Gordon Hayward Gordo...
It's like we're calling him handsome.
It's like calling him handsome, because... El Guapo was kind of sarcastic, and we can go Gordo as sarcastic, meaning he's really a handsome dude.
He's handsome and not fat at all. In fact, he looks to be in great shape, which is something that Terry Rozier confirmed recently. Second good segue.
Boom! Another good segue.
What was the Terry Rozier quote? Were you there? He was him and the rest of the Celtics have been opening basketball courts all across New England.
Yes, yes, they have been opening basketball courts. Shouts to the home court makeover that the Celtics do.
There you go, remembering the talking points.
Yep. So, yeah, he said he's seen Gordon Hayward, and that Gordon Hayward looks really good. And Brad Stevens was kind of saying the same thing the other night. He said he couldn't tell with the naked eye that Gordon Hayward has had anything wrong with him. So... Gordo is back.
Not yet. He still hasn't been cleared for 5-on-5.
He might have by now. That was like a few nights ago. So and Brad Stevens was cleared. It could be soon. It could be anytime soon.
He checked his watch even. He's checked his metaphorical watch. Or it might have his actual watch. I don't know. I don't remember. But he made the watch checking motion. What about the rookie? Bob Williams, he has also not been cleared for 5-on-5, still working tendonitis in his knee. Is there any update there?
That was a surprise. I didn't think that issue was going to linger as long as it has. Brad Stevens went out of his way to say that Big Bob has been working diligently this summer and really done a good job.
Okay, can I stop you there for a momentary beef I have with the internet?
You got beef.
You tweeted out something that, like, Robert Williams mentioned that he comes in at 8:30 every morning and he sees Al Horford and Aaron Baines in there at 6. And I quote tweeted that and said, yeah, it's because they're old and can't sleep in. A totally innocuous tweet that just wasn't, it's not very funny, it's not a very insightful thing, that got like way more likes than I'm used to, and the rest of the day I'm tweeting gems, and I get no credit, and it's just like, why give me all these likes on a BS tweet when I got way better stuff in the way better material.
I'm very sorry you had to deal with that.
I know. I had to
deal with people. I actually felt bad for the way I worded that tweet.
Yeah, everyone was jumping down the throat talking about like it was a lateness thing about Robert Williams. No, that's a note about the guys coming in early, not Williams.
Yeah,
being
no, he was trying to point out that he's learned from the vets and he's seen what the vets do, and that like they set a great example. And instead, everyone was like, "Why is he only getting in at 8 a.m.? Like, what time do you get to your job, bro?" And I actually asked one dude that, and he was like, "I get there at 7:30 when I work starts at 9, and I've climbed to the position of management." And I was like, "Respect to you, man."
Well, good for you, man. I'm glad that extra effort paid off.
Yeah, no, I really respect him. I forget what tweeter that was that came with that, but he seems like he has a great work ethic. But yeah, Robert Williams showing up at 8 is totally fine. And it's cool that he has Baines and Horford to show him that there are always going to be people there earlier than you. Unless you're Horford and Baines, in which case there's no one there earlier.
Well, Brad might be there earlier, but actually the majority of the Celtics, I think other than Kyrie, Hayward and a few others, but a lot of the Celtics are already like in the facility and are working out every day at the facility, and so I think they're going to be starting like to play probably pick up well before training camp actually starts. I don't know like official dates, but
most players are already back. They're ready to get back into the swing of things. I think part of that is the practice facility. Everyone's hyped to like actually play in the practice facility because that opened after the season. So everyone's just hyped to play in there, and everyone's hyped about the season too. There's a lot of excitement around the Celtics. Even Brad was like, "We got Kyrie coming back, we got Gordon coming back. That's like adding new players almost." Like Brad,
sure? With off season excitement.
You sure that's you, Brad? Like, you okay, man? So there's a lot of excitement around the Celtics. They are an eager bunch right now.
I would say that describes all of us because everyone was very excited online because the NFL was back, and it's just such a worse sport than the NBA. And we only have, 40 more days, 35 more days till the regular season? Like, we just need the NBA back. It's been too long.
That's facts. And it's also too long, this podcast. Another great segue.
That was like a B-minus segue.
I think that was elite. Time to wrap up the podcast. It's going too long. I thought that worked. Anyway, if you guys don't subscribe to us,
you're stupid.
But search for Locked On Celtics Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. We are the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast. We're just about back in the Monday through Friday swing now that the off season is just about over. And we are the greatest Celtics podcast ever. And we are just a beautiful, beautiful thing. So please, please listen to us forever. That's the end of this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.